Good morning. Welcome back. Sorry about last night's podcast. Early morning.
Not really. 9 o'clock.
Man, full of gratitude this morning. Just super blessed. Amazing run with my buddy Sea Dog. Suffered through it this morning. Nice reminder how blessed I am. Really trying to focus on the moment. Stay in the moment. Stay in the moment. Breathe. Enjoy the day. Fucking lucky people.
Rocket Queen, might be a little young, but honey, I ain't naive. Here I am, your Rocket Queen, oh yeah.
I love this fucking band. What's up?
Oh!
This is like the garden. This is the soil. The bed ready for the seed of my, not my seed, but you know, just like my youth. You know, I was I think I just gotten out of high school when this band had come out. I'll never forget my girlfriend at the time fucking loved Axl Rose. I mean, to a point like it actually made me jealous. I was jealous of the girlfriend loving Axl. That's how awesome he was. And not, you know, it's one of those things where you're like, fuck, I hate that she loves him, but at the same time, I loved him. He was the shit. I mean, the gyrations, the bandanas, the snakeskin boots. I mean, and it wasn't just me. It was a wave of my friends and a culture. When Guns N' Roses came out, it was like the seas parted, and there they were. And it was just a great time, for me, at least, in music and just an awesome band. Just so blessed to be around then. I probably said it before, I'd moved to San Diego. I was lucky enough to see him in San Diego. Then I got to see him in L.A. Then I got to see him in L.A. open for the Rolling Stones. Then I got to see him in San Diego open. I don't know who opened. I guess they opened for Metallica. So it was just a real, very lucky, you know, they've just come out recently, in the last year, a few years, and started touring again, and I just really didn't have any interest in seeing them anymore because I saw them at their prime, and just really lucky. So hope everyone's having a great day. This is the Sorry About Last Night podcast, and it's just me chatting about my adventures in getting sober. So I've talked a little bit about my buddy Matt. He's a fucking great guy, man. He was a fucking great guy. I got sober in 1997, March 31st, 1997. And it was by the hand of God that came down and punched me in my face or a bottle or something. And the door that opened up for me to introduce me to sobriety was really not about getting sober. It was really about avoiding the shame and guilt of getting punched in the face and explaining that to my friends and all that. So, but I took the opportunity, got sober. I mean, jumped in both feet. I'm meeting every single day I went. I was so, my life was such a shit show at the time that anything other than that just felt good. And, so jumping into the program with a sponsor and just, I just loved it. And I did it for about 7 years. I almost celebrated 7 years. And one day I was driving. I had moved over to Easton, Maryland, took a new job. And I, one day I was driving and this voice showed up in my head and was like, you know what? Look how good you've done. Look how great you've been. Maybe trying to have a drink would be okay now. I mean, it's been 7 years almost. Maybe you can drink. And on top of that, I think that you deserve it. Deserve it. It's funny being sober. You know, what's the definition of sober? To be without drink? Well, geez. I'd been sober for a while. But serene? Serenity? I didn't know what that meant. Had no idea. And the lack of serenity in my life and only sobriety, only being sober, was just enough for that voice to creep in. And I made a right turn at the liquor store and I bought the little bottle of vodka. I think it was like pop-off. No, I think it was, I forget even what kind it was. It was upper class. I mean, I had a job now. I was making actually decent money. You know, all the time I'd spent being sober, you know, I'd gone to Rutgers. I got a degree in turf management. I'd gotten a management job. And so I was actually making money. I was married. I had a life. And so I was able to buy, when that moment showed up, I was able to buy good vodka. And by the end of the week, I was hiding bottles. Hiding them. And it was so fucked up. I could drink a bottle. Like, I could get, I don't know, was it a pint? I think it was like a pint. I think I could drink a pint before my wife got home, and she wouldn't know. But the problem is that every once in a while, I would have a pint and a little more. And once I had the little more, she could tell. And then I'd have to start doing the old, I'm sorry, I'm going to do better. Actually, it was kind of funny when I think about it. I actually convinced her that I thought that I could drink again. And it was not the case. It was definitely not the case. And what had come to me so easily, that desire to stop drinking, was gone. And I could not put down that fucking bottle again.
You better turn me on tonight, and here I am, oh, your rocket queen.
I don't know about you, but man, that is probably, I don't, when this album came out, that song would be absolutely one of my favorite songs. Rocket Queen. I mean, Guns N' Roses was the band that represented me at the time. Running the streets, drinking, partying, no good to anybody. Just having a blast, and that was the anthem behind all my actions at the time, was that Guns N' Roses, and just couldn't get enough of them. And the only thing that knocked them down off the pedestal was Pearl Jam, and still love them. But last night I was thinking about music, and I was going to run this morning, so I was trying to figure out, you know, what I'd listen to, and I started diving into, one of the great things about Spotify is there's just so much music that you can listen to. So I went into the Guns N' Roses, and they have everything, all that music. It was really nice. So that song has always been a big part of my life. I love that song, Rocket Queen. But the point of that whole story was that, you know, I mean, really, the point of this podcast is really, you know, I spent 7 years because I was sober. I was free from drink. The first step, you know, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I mean, you could spend years on that step. We, as a group, admitted, surrendered, that our lives had become unmanageable. I didn't have a life. That right there is a little tricky. Because I actually had no life before I got sober, or before I put down the drink. I had no life. My life did not become unmanageable until I put down the drink, until I got sober. But it doesn't say that. It says our lives became unmanageable. Well, yeah, my life had been unmanageable Actually, my dad was managing it because I couldn't even manage my own life. My dad, you know, if it wasn't for my parents, I'd be dead or in jail. So my dad was managing my life. I didn't take over until I got sober. And I still didn't even take over. I had a group of people that surrounded me that helped me manage my life. But my life didn't become unmanageable until I got sober. So that's a tricky little nugget in there. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I thought my life was unmanageable because I drank alcohol. My life is unmanageable because I'm a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility. It should just say that. Step one, you're a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility. Step two, our lives become unmanageable. I'm not rewriting anything. Skip that if that's annoying. Just ignore that. But the fact is that that's my problem. Put down the drink and that's what I'm left with, a self-centered asshole. And that doesn't get what he wants. One of my first sponsors used to have this great saying, something similar to that. But I used to, you know, I used to think, what the hell is he talking about? And there was another lady that said, I'm a human being, I'm a spiritual being having a human experience that involves alcohol. And I used to say, why does she have to say that? I mean, how sober are you if that is something that is important for you to say? Why do you need to take the time? You know, good morning, my name is Tom, I'm an alcoholic. Good morning, my name is so-and-so, and I'm a spiritual being having a human experience that involves alcohol. And it used to aggravate me. You know, am I sober or am I minding my own business sober? You know, why does that aggravate me? Why should I even care? But that's starting to be, that was the beginning of unmanageable. I can't manage that feeling. Why is that annoying? You know, I see people, you know, me doing this podcast is, you know, it's probably driving some fucking guy crazy right now. Some sober guy or sober girl is probably like, why is this guy got to be doing a podcast and talk about sobriety? Yeah, I get it. I absolutely get it. And, you know, hang in there. I'm hanging in there. But those are the weird things that start to undermine, you know, this amazing foundation that I think I've built. You know, I thought my foundation in sobriety was built with cinder blocks and concrete and rock hard and solid. And no, it wasn't. It was built on sand. And you start pouring the vodka on the sand and the sand starts washing away and you realize there is no foundation. It's all the shit that I've come up with. And, you know, it's a real eye-opening experience when that shit starts to show up. I'm going to talk more about Matt here in a second. You know, fast forward some years, and because when I picked up that bottle, I couldn't put it down. Like everything, all the time I'd put in was gone. It was like starting completely over, and I had no desire. In fact, it was worse. I had no desire, you know. And I was carrying around this extra luggage basket of I've been to a bunch of meetings, and I'm, you know, I become cynical. I didn't like the way they were run. I didn't like the way that the people, you know, organized them. I didn't like anything. I just become pretty toxic. And fast forward, finally got sober. And I asked my buddy Matt, I'm like, hey, I need a sponsor. Can you be my sponsor? And he's like, absolutely. He goes, oh, no, he didn't actually say that. He said, call me tomorrow and we'll see how it goes. And Matt was so great, and I don't even know if Matt knew how great he was at some of these things, but he said, call me tomorrow, and we'll see how it goes. And so the first day I called him, and no answer. The second day I called him, no answer. I'm fucking getting pissed, because in my mind, I know, I'm thinking, he knows I clearly have something important to say, right? And the third day I called him, he finally answered. He's like, hey, man. And of course, I'm like, hey, man. And he goes, call me tomorrow. I'll talk to you then. Click.
But standing on your own, yeah, it's such a lonely place for you to be. If you need a shoulder, or if you need a friend, you know what? I'll be there standing until the bitter end.
This is the shit that locked me into this band right here.
Out in the rain. Much too far, baby, yeah. Whoa.
Sing it, bro. I have to get my bandana on right now.
What's for you?
Isn't that like every alcoholic? I just want you to know that I care. I just want to be recognized. Oh my God. Yeah. So the third day he finally answered, hey man, you know, and I was pissed. I was so annoyed because I, you know, this is serious. I need to get sober. All of a sudden the world needs to stop because I need to get sober and I need help. And I've asked, you said, yes, let's get with it. 3 days later, he finally answers the phone. Hey, man. And of course, all that had pissed off, annoyed feelings disappeared. And I was like, hey, man. And he's like, thanks for calling. Call me tomorrow. Bye. I was like, what the fuck? That seven number prayer I would dial for probably 7 or 8 years. Every single day I would call. It was one of those things for a guy like me, an alcoholic like me, to be given a chore by a guy like that. I wasn't going to let him down. I wanted him to know that I cared. I wanted his approval. You know, it was funny. When I first got sober, I gravitated to the important people because I didn't hang out with important people prior to that. I didn't have a life. Nobody wanted to hang out with me. So it's like being an alcoholic and then having a job. You know, I'd show up to my job drunk, but I showed up. And as long as I showed up, I wasn't an alcoholic because I never lost a job because of alcohol. And I wanted to be associated with smart, important people because, look, I'm hanging out with smart, important people. I'm doing good. And so a guy like that, to tell me to call, I never stopped. But that seven-number prayer would be like, I would learn so many lessons from that. And just that, 3 days, I learned how quick I turn, how much I want my way, and what a chicken shit I am. When he answered, and I didn't say, hey, man, I didn't appreciate you not answering the phone for 3 days. I was like, hey, man. Like, I had no issue with it. I was such a phony. And, but that's the kind of shit that Matt would teach me, you know? I don't know. I miss that guy. He saved my life. And I'm sure I'll talk about him. I mean, that guy was just... I posted a picture this morning on my Facebook. He was... we rode motorcycles together. But he was the... You know, a guy like that. But of course, Matt had like 7 motorcycles. And if you see the picture on Facebook, it's Matt with his 7 motorcycles. Mine's in there. I had a Harley. I had a Harley because I would, you know, I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be cool. So I had to have the Harley. And my motorcycle's in there, but he had like the Ducati and the Harley. And he, I mean, you know, he had the money so he could buy it, but one wasn't good enough. And, you know, I'm not speaking for Matt, but I know that a guy like me, if I had more money, one wouldn't have been good enough. I'd have had more motorcycles. But he was just such a great guy. I'm just full of gratitude today. I ran this morning. I suffered. You know, I tore down that wall. I opened up my spirit this morning and was able to, you know, just really stay centered, stay in the moment. Be grateful. Enjoy the air. I left all the negative feelings that else they'll come back today. You know, this whole COVID-19 thing is, you know, it's getting to that toxic place. You know, it's making us toxic. You know, why do we have masks on? You don't wear a mask. There's a group of people that aren't wearing masks, and they look at you because you have one on, like you're now this bad guy. But I get it, because, you know, are we part of the problem or are we part of the solution? It's very tough. You know, I ran with my buddy this morning, and, you know, he's not a big spiritual guy. He's not a big runner, but he's doing it, you know. And I see, you know, I think I posted something that's like, you know, exercising the demons. You know, we start off just full of self, you know. Is that the devil? This Joe, you know, I love Joe Rogan's podcast, and he told this story. And how much time we got here? Where we at, people? Where we at? Oh yeah. So this was kind of this actually kind of changed not my life, but really my perception of a lot of things. You know, as a kid, I grew up, you know, with satanic music. You know, everything was satanic. You know, Big Black Sabbath, Judas Priest, Ozzy, you know, all these bands, Merciful Fate, Sepultura, Metallica. You know, if it was a big band and they were popular and they were heavy, they were satanic, right? And, you know, I always thought that, you know, when I grew up in Albuquerque, and there was this house down in the middle of the city, and if you'd go by it, like, it had a purple door, and it was the satanic house, and, you know, I pictured like Satan and Satanism as, you know, cauldrons and serpents and lava and burning hell and all this shit. And so this Joe Rogan podcast, this guy, I guess I've seen the comedian. He does a puppet skit, and one of his puppets is like a devil. And the guy is invited by the leader of the Southern California chapter of the Satanic Church to come and perform at his daughter's wedding. And the guy's like, oh, geez. So he performs this satanic puppet. The leader of the Satanic Church invites him to come and perform at his daughter's wedding. The guy's like, holy shit. So he calls up Joe Rogan. He says, dude, I've been invited to do this, perform. I guess he's being paid. You know, he's hired. He's being hired. He's like, I don't want to go by myself. Will you go with me? And Joe Rogan's like, hell yeah, I'll go. So they go up, they go down there. I guess they're up in L.A., so I guess they go down to San Diego. And they show up, and it's the most well-put-together, beautiful wedding, you know, they've ever seen. And it's beautiful. Everything is fantastic. And Joe Rogan ends up meeting the guy, the father, the leader, Satan. And he says, yo, bro. What's the deal? You know, I came here and I was expecting, you know, cauldrons and serpents and naked women dancing and just, you know. And he goes, oh, no, no. Here at the Satanic Church, I'm making this part up, but the point was, he said, listen, here at this, you know, our belief is to do what you want. Do whatever makes you happy. You know, when you're climbing that mountain with a friend, like this morning, you know, I ran with my buddy. He's just starting, So he's slower. I'm not fast, but I'm faster than him. But neither one of us are, you know, we're setting any records. But in the Satanic Church, you know, I run with my buddy Sea Dog, and I run, I take off, I leave him behind, I finish, and I win, and I stick my arms up in the air, and I say, yes, I won. And then when he comes, I, you know, I point, hey, I won. I won. Where like a Christian or a, you know, a faith-based more church, you know, you, which I did, you know, I waited for him and I finished with him together. You know, you put your hand out, come on, brother, let's finish this together. Good job. And that's more of like a, you know, a Christian-based kind of lifestyle. And I thought, fuck, I've been living the other way my whole life. It's always been about me. You know, that's my disease, right? Self-centered. You know, when I get to that fork in the road and you have the option of doing what I should do, and maybe what I should do maybe is a more Christian, faith-based kind of thing, or what I want to do, which according to the guy from the Satanic Church is their philosophy, do what you want. And I'm like, well, shit, I've been doing that all my life. I've been doing exactly what I want, you know, at the expense of everyone. You know, my parents, you know, my parents, you know, I was never really a thief. I did steal some shit just out of being stupid, but I wasn't, you know, it wasn't a career. You know, I never stole from my parents yet. You know, it could have happened eventually. It may still happen one day. I don't know. But as of now, I had never stolen from my parents. And Matt's like, dude, you know, you stole fucking your parents' peace of mind, their serenity. You know, living that lifestyle and your parents laying in bed wondering, are you ever going to come home? Are they going to find you dead? Are you going to get, you know, a call from the jail? You know, that has value. That has value to people, and I stole that from my parents. But I never really considered that. You know, it was always, I never stole physical stuff. I had been living a satanic life all my life, and I still struggle with it. You know, I get caught up in that ego, that self-centered shit. You know, poor me. Why not me? How come I can't? When is my time? It's toxic. Oh, and then on top of that, have a drink of vodka? I mean, is that alcoholism? The story really opened my eyes up. You know, I'd never consider myself satanic. I'd never consider myself a devil lover. You know, growing up with all that music, it was always thrown in our face. So this is satanic. And, you know, it was just about selling records and selling magazines and selling. But, you know, I'd never really thought of it that way. And then when I heard the story from Joe Rogan, I'm like, Jesus. You know, I don't want to live like that. The only problem with this is sometimes it's kind of boring. You know, I like to have a nice car. I like to work for stuff. I like to provide. But, you know, I still like to have some things. How do you balance that? You know? Is it about, you know, I went a long time unaware of any of that, you know. Now I'm aware of it. So does that make it better when I still do it? I don't know. Sometimes I think, you know, the fact is I'm just a guy living, just a, you know, another human being. And I always say if I was the only person on the planet, I would have no problems. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Peace. Oh, yeah, yeah. Fucking love Axel. We'll be right back. a great Thursday. Stay sober, everybody. Enjoy the day. Yeah. Woo. Hey.